Tennessee Williams' Cat on a Hot Tin Roof stands as one of the most celebrated American plays of the 20th century, winning the Pulitzer Prize for Drama in 1955 and continuing to captivate audiences worldwide through countless revivals. Elizabeth Taylor and Paul Newman immortalized the roles of Maggie and Brick in the 1958 film adaptation, cementing the play's place in popular culture. What makes this work so enduring is Williams' unflinching examination of human frailty, desire, and deception, themes that resonate as powerfully today as when first performed. Williams himself struggled with alcoholism and his sexuality in an unaccepting era, infusing his work with autobiographical elements that give it remarkable authenticity. The play's exploration of repressed homosexuality was revolutionary for its time, and its brutal honesty about family dynamics continues to influence contemporary playwrights and screenwriters. Even today, celebrities like Scarlett Johansson and Benedict Cumberbatch have sought out roles in Cat revivals, drawn to the raw emotional territory Williams mapped so masterfully. The setting itself speaks volumes before a single character utters a word. Williams places us in the bed sitting room of a Mississippi Delta plantation home, a space haunted by ghosts, specifically the two bachelors who previously shared the room throughout their lives together. This Victorian meets Far Eastern backdrop establishes both the wealth of the family and the underlying themes of repressed sexuality and hidden truths that will unfold. The room's eclectic decor, from its heavy Victorian furniture to delicate Asian screens, reflects the cultural tensions between old Southern traditions and modernizing influences. This plantation represents the crumbling edifice of Southern aristocracy, opulent yet decaying, much like the family relationships within its walls. The mansion's external grandeur masks internal rot, from its weathered columns to its fading wallpaper, mirroring the facade of respectability maintained by its inhabitants. The room becomes a pressure cooker where characters are forced to confront what they've spent lifetimes avoiding. The bed dominates the space, symbolizing both the sexual tension between Maggie and Brick and the marital battlefield where their private war unfolds. Its prominence serves as a constant reminder of the physical and emotional intimacy lacking in their relationship. Williams' stage directions are meticulous, creating what he calls a poetic backdrop for human extremities of emotion. Every detail serves multiple purposes. The liquor cabinet represents Brick's escape mechanism. The mirror reflects characters forced to face themselves. And the French doors suggest both escape and entrapment. The designer notes reveal his intention for the setting to feel both physically real and symbolically charged. The ghosts of the previous occupants, Jack Straw and Peter Ocello, hover over the proceedings, suggesting that Brick's struggles with his sexuality have historical precedent in this very space. Their unseen presence adds layers of meaning to every interaction, particularly in moments when characters discuss the nature of friendship and love. What's particularly striking is how Williams uses this confined setting to explore vast emotional territories. As characters enter and exit, the room becomes a confessional booth, an interrogation chamber, and occasionally a battlefield. The plantation represents wealth and status, but within this single room, we witness the price paid for maintaining appearances, the architecture of mendacity that supports the entire household. The set's various levels and areas create distinct power positions. The bedroom area represents intimate truth. The sitting area becomes a stage for social performance, and the gallery beyond serves as a reminder of the watching, judging world outside. The physical architecture mirrors the elaborate construct of lies the characters have built around themselves. Just as the plantation's grandeur requires constant maintenance to prevent decay, the family's social position demands continuous performance of expected roles. The room's mixture of refinement and decay becomes a physical manifestation of Big Daddy's empire, impressive on the surface, but rotting from within. Maggie enters the play as a woman fighting for survival. Pretty, but with anxious lines etching her face, she embodies desire in its most desperate form. Her nickname, Maggie the Cat, perfectly captures her nature. Sensual, tenacious, and determined to land on her feet no matter how precarious her position. She prowls the bedroom like a caged animal, alternating between seduction and confrontation as she tries to reconnect with her alcoholic husband. What makes Maggie so compelling is her brutal honesty about her motivations. She openly acknowledges her interest in securing Brick's inheritance, yet this materialism is intertwined with genuine love. When she declares, "I'm not living with you, we occupy the same cage," she articulates the central paradox of their marriage: physical proximity without emotional connection. Maggie's sexuality is both her weapon and her vulnerability. Her famous opening line about feeling like a cat on a hot tin roof evokes her constant state of agitation and unfulfilled desire. Yet beneath her feline qualities lies remarkable strength. She refuses to accept Brick's emotional abandonment, challenging him repeatedly despite his cruel indifference. Her determination becomes almost heroic when she declares, "I'm not going to give up, Brick. I'm not going to live the rest of my life with a defeated man." What's particularly fascinating about Maggie is her evolution throughout the play. Initially appearing somewhat mercenary in her pursuit of Big Daddy's fortune, she gradually reveals deeper layers. Her genuine love for Brick, her understanding of his pain, and her willingness to fight for their marriage when he has surrendered. By the final act, when she takes control by disposing of Brick's liquor and declaring her intention to make her pregnancy lie true, we witness her transformation from desperate cat to determined woman. Her closing lines, "Nothing's more determined than a cat on a tin roof," resonate as both a personal declaration and the play's thematic statement about survival. If Maggie represents desperate vitality, Brick embodies beautiful destruction. A former football star now drowning in alcohol, Brick moves through the play with an air of detached contempt, his physical beauty intact while his spirit crumbles. His crutch serves as both literal support for his broken ankle and perfect metaphor for his emotional crippling. Brick's alcoholism functions as self-medication against painful truths. He drinks methodically, waiting for the click, that moment when alcohol finally brings peace. "It's just a mechanical thing," he explains, revealing how he has reduced emotional relief to a predictable chemical reaction. This detachment extends to his marriage. He treats Maggie with cold indifference, refusing her both physically and emotionally. The central mystery driving the play is what broke this golden boy. Gradually, we learn about his relationship with his football teammate Skipper, and how Skipper's death triggered Brick's downward spiral. Brick's disgust with mensality, the lies and compromises that structure social life, becomes his justification for withdrawal. Yet this moral stance masks deeper truths he cannot face about his sexuality and his role in Skipper's destruction. What makes Brick's character so devastating is his awareness of his own deterioration. Unlike other alcoholics who deny their addiction, Brick acknowledges his dependence on liquor with clear-eyed resignation. When Big Daddy confronts him about drinking himself to death, Brick responds with chilling calm. "Yes, sir, I guess that's right." This self-awareness without self-preservation creates the play's most tragic figure, a man who sees his destruction but lacks the will to prevent it. The turning point comes when Brick finally articulates the truth about Skipper's confession of love and his own rejection of that confession. In this moment of brutal honesty, Brick reveals his complicity in his friend's death, hanging up the phone when Skipper needed him most. This revelation doesn't heal Brick, but it forces him to confront the hollowness of his moral superiority. His disgust with mensality, as Big Daddy points out, is really disgust with himself. Big Daddy Pollitt bursts into the play as a force in nature, crude, vital, and newly returned from what he believes was a cancer scare. His 65th birthday celebration forms the backdrop for the play's action, creating dramatic irony as the audience learns what Big Daddy doesn't know. His cancer is terminal, and this birthday will be his last. What distinguishes Big Daddy is his hatred of lies. Having survived poverty to build an empire, he has no patience for social niceties or false sentiment. The human animal is a beast that dies, he declares, and if he's got money, he buys and buys and buys. This materialistic philosophy masks a deeper understanding of life's brevity and the worthlessness of possessions in the face of death. The confrontation between Big Daddy and Brick forms the play's emotional core. Unlike others who tiptoe around Brick's alcoholism, Big Daddy demands answers. "What are you disgusted with?" he repeatedly asks, refusing to accept Brick's vague references to mendacity. This interrogation creates the play's most honest exchange, as Big Daddy shares his own disgust with human behavior while pushing Brick towards self-awareness. The tragic power of Big Daddy's character emerges when he learns the truth about his condition. His rage at being lied to, "Christ damn all lying sons of blind bitches," carries both personal fury and universal protest against mortality. What makes this moment so devastating is that Big Daddy, who prided himself on facing truth, has been denied the chance to face his own death honestly until it's almost too late. Big Daddy's character embodies the play's central themes: the human need for truth versus the comfort of lies, the accumulation of wealth versus its ultimate meaninglessness, and the desperate vitality of those facing mortality. His crude vitality, talking about sex, bowel movements, and death with equal frankness, provides a counterpoint to Brick's emotional withdrawal and the family's polite deceptions. While the emotional triangle of Maggie, Brick, and Big Daddy forms the play's core, the machinations of Gooper and his wife May provide its social framework. As Big Daddy's elder son, Gooper represents conventional success, a lawyer with a growing family who has followed society's prescribed path. Yet Williams portrays this conformity as fundamentally mercenary, with Gooper's concern for his father thinly disguising his interest in the inheritance. May embodies the play's most nakedly ambitious character, using her fertility as a weapon in the inheritance battle. Her constant parading of her no-neck monsters, as Maggie cruelly calls their children, before Big Daddy represents her primary strategy, reminding him that only Gooper's branch of the family is producing heirs. When she smugly announces, "We've produced 5 children and without any scientific assistance," the barb is aimed directly at the childless Maggie. What makes these characters more than simple villains is Williams' understanding of their perspective. When Gooper finally erupts with resentment over Big Daddy's preference for Brick, despite his own lifelong efforts to please his father, we glimpse the genuine pain beneath his calculation. "I've always been second string in this house," he complains, revealing how parental favoritism has shaped his character. The inheritance battle exposes how family relationships become transactional when wealth is involved. Gooper's carefully prepared legal documents, which would give him control of the estate while providing an allowance for Brick, reveal his long-standing plans. May's performance of grief, crying, 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 as Maggie mockingly describes it, demonstrates how emotion itself becomes currency in family power struggles. Williams uses these characters to explore how capitalism infiltrates even our most intimate relationships. The plantation, with its 28,000 acres and $10 million value, becomes the prize that transforms family members into competitors. The economic subtext of the play reveals how wealth distorts love, with genuine concern becoming indistinguishable from financial self-interest. At the heart of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof lies a subject that was revolutionary for its time: the suggestion of homosexuality between Brick and his deceased friend Skipper. Williams approaches this theme with remarkable subtlety, never explicitly labeling the relationship, but allowing its emotional truth to emerge through the character's painful confrontations. Brick and Skipper's relationship is described in mythic terms, one of those beautiful, ideal things they tell about in the Greek legends. Their formation of the Dixie Stars football team represented an attempt to preserve their bond beyond college, creating what Maggie calls that perfect friendship, that thing between you and Skipper that had to be kept on ice. This description evokes both the purity and the fragility of their connection. The tragedy unfolds when this unacknowledged love collides with societal expectations. Skipper's attempt to prove his heterosexuality by sleeping with Maggie fails, leading to his drunken phone confession to Brick, the call Brick refused to accept. Skipper's subsequent descent into alcoholism and drug abuse parallels Brick's current condition, suggesting that both men suffered from the same inability to reconcile their desires with social norms. What makes William's treatment of this theme so powerful is his refusal to provide easy labels or explanations. When Big Daddy pushes Brick about his relationship with Skipper, Brick responds with genuine confusion. Why can't exceptional friendship, real, deep friendship between two men, be respected as something clean and decent? This question hangs over the play, challenging the audience to examine their own assumptions about male intimacy. The repression of desire, whether sexual or emotional, creates the play's central tragedy. Brick's inability to acknowledge his feelings for Skipper led to his friend's destruction and his own emotional death. This theme extends beyond homosexuality to encompass all forms of denied truth, connecting to the play's broader examination of mendacity. As Big Daddy observes, wouldn't it be funny if that was true? If that was what happened to you? That you threw away your life because of some piece of ass that didn't mean any more to you than another? While often overlooked in discussions of the play, Big Mama serves as a crucial counterpoint to the truth seekers. Overweight, overly demonstrative, and desperately clinging to illusions about her marriage, she represents the comfort that self-deception can provide. Her belief that Big Daddy loves her, despite his open contempt, allows her to maintain her role as the plantation's emotional center. Big Mama's entrance in Act 1 immediately establishes her character, loud, affectionate, and oblivious to underlying tensions. Her repeated assertions that the doctor found only a spastic colon reveal her determination to deny Big Daddy's cancer diagnosis. This willful ignorance extends to her marriage. When Big Daddy cruelly rejects her affection, declaring he's been putting up with her for 40 years, she initially laughs it off as birthday high spirits. What prevents Big Mama from becoming merely pathetic is her genuine love for her family. Her concern for Brick's drinking shows real maternal insight, and her attempts to mediate family conflicts, however clumsy, come from genuine desire for harmony. When the truth about Big Daddy's condition finally emerges, her grief is profound and authentic. I want my husband! I want my husband! I want my husband! Williams uses Big Mama to explore how some illusions might be necessary for survival. Her belief in Big Daddy's love sustained her through decades of marriage, just as her denial of his cancer allows her to function during the birthday celebration. The play asks whether such self-deception represents weakness or a form of emotional strength, the ability to create meaning despite contrary evidence. Big Mama also embodies the play's generational perspective on marriage. Her acceptance of Big Daddy's cruelty contrasts with Maggie's refusal to accept Brick's indifference. When she advises Maggie to just be sweet to him, she reveals both the compromises of her generation and the limited options available to women of her era. Her character suggests that Maggie's determination to fight for her marriage represents evolutionary progress rather than mere stubbornness. The play's conclusion masterfully balances resolution with lingering questions, showcasing William's sophisticated approach to human psychology and relationships. The existence of two distinct third acts, the original version Williams wrote and the revised Broadway version developed with director Elia Kazan, offers fascinating insight into different interpretations of redemption and the possibility of personal transformation. In both versions, Maggie emerges as the catalyst for potential change through a bold and desperate strategy, announcing her pregnancy with Brick's child, despite their months of sexual estrangement. This fabrication becomes more than mere deception. It represents her determined bid to secure their future both financially and emotionally. The moment when she methodically removes Brick's alcohol and proclaims her intention to make the lie truth, and then I'll bring you liquor and we'll get drunk together, here, tonight, in this place that death has come into, serves as a powerful turning point. Her actions transform a desperate lie into a possible path toward renewal, suggesting that sometimes fiction can pave the way for truth. The two versions diverge significantly in their portrayal of Brick's response to Maggie's determination. The Broadway version, influenced by Kazan's more optimistic theatrical sensibilities, shows Brick exhibiting subtle but meaningful signs of change. He actively defends Maggie against May's accusations, acknowledges the vitality he sees in her, noting the life in her body, and delivers the potentially transformative line, "I admire you, Maggie." These moments suggest the possibility of reconciliation and healing. In contrast, William's original version maintains Brick's emotional distance. While he expresses admiration for Maggie's persistence, his detachment remains palpable, suggesting that recognition of another's strength doesn't necessarily lead to personal transformation. The dual endings share a compelling ambiguity that elevates the play's dramatic impact. Williams refuses to provide definitive answers about whether Maggie will succeed in conceiving, whether Brick will overcome his alcoholism and emotional paralysis, or whether their marriage can be truly renewed. Instead, the play concludes with a moment of profound possibility. Maggie kneeling beside Brick, touching his face with genuine tenderness while asserting her determination to prevail. This gesture embodies both hope and uncertainty, love and manipulation. This intentionally open-ended conclusion reflects William's nuanced understanding of human nature and change. Rather than offering either complete redemption or total despair, the play suggests that transformation occurs in small moments and uncertain steps. Even in the face of mortality, familial deception, and profound disconnection, human desire and determination remain powerful forces for potential change. The ending's ambiguity forces audiences to grapple with their own beliefs about the possibility of redemption and the nature of love's transformative power. Moreover, the existence of two versions suggests William's own ambivalence about the nature of change and healing. Both endings acknowledge that while the human spirit may be resilient, true transformation remains mysterious and uncertain, much like life itself. Cat on a Hot Tin Roof continues to resonate because it captures universal human struggles through specific, unforgettable characters. The play's exploration of truth versus comfortable lies speaks directly to our contemporary moment when fake news and alternative facts have entered our vocabulary. Big Daddy's rage against mendacity feels startlingly relevant in an era of institutional deception and personal brand management. The play's treatment of sexuality, both Maggie's frustrated desire and Brick's repressed feelings for Skipper, remains revolutionary in its honesty. Williams refuses to moralize about desire, instead showing how its suppression creates far more damage than its expression. This perspective, radical for 1955, continues to challenge audiences to examine their own attitudes toward sexuality and intimacy. Perhaps most powerfully, Cat explores how families function as systems of mutual deception, where unspoken rules determine what truths can be acknowledged. The birthday celebration for a dying man becomes the perfect metaphor for family gatherings everywhere, occasions where what remains unsaid often matters more than what's expressed. When Big Mama declares, "There's so much to be thankful for," even as her husband is dying and her family is fracturing, she articulates the desperate optimism that often masks family dysfunction. William's genius lies in creating characters whose flaws make them more rather than less compelling. Maggie's ambition, Brick's self-destruction, Big Daddy's cruelty, and Big Mama's self-deception are presented without judgment, but with deep understanding of their psychological origins. This compassionate vision allows audiences to recognize their own struggles in these deeply flawed characters. In the end, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof asks whether truth-telling is always virtuous and whether some illusions might be necessary for survival. It suggests that human connection, however imperfect, remains our best defense against mortality and meaninglessness. As Maggie kneels beside Brick in the play's final moment, we witness not a happy ending, but something more authentic, the persistence of desire in the face of overwhelming odds. Like the cat of the title, William's characters cling tenaciously to life's hot surfaces, refusing to surrender despite the pain of remaining engaged.